This evening we continue with our look at the book of Daniel. Today we're looking at Daniel chapter 4. Daniel chapter 4, we're going to be reading about the pride of Nebuchadnezzar. And some of you may be wondering, as many do, is this realistic to see Nebuchadnezzar as such a proud man at this point? He has seen the power of God. He has become acquainted with the God of heaven and earth through Daniel and Daniel's three friends especially. Is it even reasonable to think that a man who has seen what Nebuchadnezzar has seen would still be so proud in the face of the Lord? And I think we can all answer that question just simply by looking at ourselves. Yes, he could. I think that is very much human nature, is it not, to hang on to our pride or to forget our humility, perhaps until it is brought home to us again and again, our own humble state before God. That's what we're going to be seeing with King Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God hath brought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore made I a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. Then came in the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers, and I told the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And before him I told the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee, tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen, and the interpretations thereof. Thus were the visions of mine head in my bed. I saw, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great. The tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof reached unto heaven, and the sight thereof to the end of all the earth. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all. The beasts of the field had shadow under it, and the fowls of the heaven dwelt in the boughs thereof, and all flesh was fed of it. I saw in the visions of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher, and a holy one came down from heaven. He cried aloud and said thus, hew down the tree and cut off his branches, shake off his leaves and scatter his fruit. Let the beasts get away from under it and the fowls from his branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts in the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. This matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. This dream I, Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now thou, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof. For as much as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, but thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. The king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. Belteshazzar answered and said, My lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof to thine enemies. The tree that thou sawest, which grew and was strong, whose height reached unto the heaven, and the sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and all the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of the heaven had their habitation, it is thou, O king, that art grown and become strong. For thy greatness is grown, and reacheth unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. And whereas the king saw a watcher and a holy one coming down from heaven, and saying, Hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the field, till seven times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven. And seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee. After that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. All this came upon the king Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spake and said, Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O king Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken. The kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomever he will. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. And he was driven from men, and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and my understanding returned unto me. And I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay his hand or say unto him, What doest thou? At the same time my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lord sought unto me. And I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Nebuchadnezzar makes very clear right from the beginning what this is going to be about. He begins his account and he ends his account with the same ideas. These are the wonders that the God of heaven and earth has wrought before me and unto me. This is what the God of heaven did to me, and he could do that to me because his kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. Verse 3, that's the point. That's the lesson of the whole thing. And then Nebuchadnezzar repeats those ideas at the end. Verse 34, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. Men can possess it for a time, but that never means it's really theirs. We might find ourselves in situations of power, of authority, of wealth, but it is never the case that we have done it, and that we can keep it, and that we can protect it. And it's certainly never the case that we can glory in ourselves for having it. Nebuchadnezzar may well have been the most powerful man in the ancient world, the most glorious king of the ancient Near East. And yet he could not hang on to it for one moment when the Lord decided to take it away from him. Not only could he not hang on to his own kingdom, Babylon, he could not even rule in his own kingdom of his own self. Nebuchadnezzar didn't just lose the lordship of the Babylonian Empire, he lost the lordship of his own brain, his own heart, his own self. I think this is one of those passages, there are quite a few of them in the Old Testament, where the Middle Ages and other pre-modern civilizations probably understood these words with more power than we do. In the Middle Ages, it was very common to see reason as the king of the human self. It was the ruler of the human self. It's what distinguished human beings from animals. And they often pictured, in medieval understanding of the human character, the human being as a microcosm of a kingdom. And it was the reason that reigned supreme. And how fitting that Nebuchadnezzar would have even that taken from him as a result of his pride. God's dominion is an everlasting one. And I think Nebuchadnezzar is implying very strongly, I have learned that mine is not. And what an important lesson to learn. First of all, note Nebuchadnezzar's condition when these things come about. He is contented. He is prosperous. He is flourishing. Verse 4, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourishing in my palace. He was in great shape. He was perhaps at the peak of his rule. Now, I don't think Nebuchadnezzar was necessarily a man at this point who didn't have a clue. I think if we look at chapters 2 and 3 and see the type of man Nebuchadnezzar was, and then look at him in chapter 4, even before his reason was taken from him, I think we do see a man who has grown somewhat in the knowledge of God. If you look at the way he approaches Daniel to ask about the interpretation of this dream, I think we see a man there who is more humble, more careful than we see in chapters 2 and 3, but yet he is still taking pride in himself. He has learned that the God of heaven and earth is a powerful God, but it appears he has not yet learned that Nebuchadnezzar is nothing before him. I think that's very common. I think there are many people who are Christians, and perhaps sincerely, I don't mean to judge their hearts, but they are certainly members of churches. They are certainly sometimes in positions of authority, and there can still be within them that I am the king of myself attitude. Pride is a very subtle thing. It can be a very subtle thing. It's a very dangerous thing. And I think a good deal of pride is very much compatible with a good deal of knowledge of the gospel and the humility that is demanded of us. It appears, doesn't it, that we need to be humbled again and again. And that is what's going to happen to Nebuchadnezzar. God begins to assert his power once again over Nebuchadnezzar. Note the following verses. What is the first effect that the dream has on Nebuchadnezzar? It makes him afraid. The thoughts upon his bed troubled him. Now, we saw that earlier. Again, he is troubled by a dream. He is afraid, it says specifically here. I don't know if any of you have ever had the experience of waking up in the middle of the night, perhaps from a dream that you can't quite remember, and you are very troubled and you are very afraid. Sometimes, I know it's common from talking to other people, sometimes that involves waking up with this feeling that there is something dark and evil in the house, something that's troubling you. And I don't know if you've ever had the experience of lying there and trying to regain control, of telling yourself, it's okay, I'm here in my own bed, you know, trying to wake up. And it's a disturbing thing, isn't it, to not be able to take possession of your own mind, to feel that your mind can be so affected by something so outside yourself, and to feel so helpless before it. Nebuchadnezzar is troubled. He is bothered by the dream in his inmost parts, in the place that seems to be the most completely his. He is finding out that he really is not in control. I think that's a big part of it for pride, isn't it? It's that fear of losing control. I hate teaching my children how to drive. Not because they're so bad at it, but because I do not like sitting in any car and not being in control. I think there are all kinds of things like that. We just like that feeling that we are in control. But of course we're not. Not even Nebuchadnezzar is in control. Now, I don't mean to suggest that we don't have our responsibilities and that we can do certain things and that we have the power to do them well or do them poorly. But ultimately, we are not in control. In verse 14, we read that a holy one, a watcher, came down from heaven, a servant of the Most High. That might be significant. Nebuchadnezzar, in a sense, is not going to be condemned or judged by God directly, but it appears possibly by a council of God's holy servants. We don't know that the chapter here doesn't go into much detail, but it seems to suggest that Nebuchadnezzar has faced judgment in heaven, perhaps from angels, perhaps from a divine council, but he is going to be judged, and his fate is announced by this messenger, this holy one from heaven. Look a moment at verse 12. The power of Nebuchadnezzar is acknowledged. In the dream, a good deal is made of the power and fruitfulness of the tree, the protection offered by the tree, its great height, its great strength. All these people found shelter under it. And that appears to have been very much true in a figurative sense. The ancient Near East seemed to generally be in one of two conditions: chaos, with lots of people fighting back and forth and not much security, or under the strength of a great and powerful ruler. And it is quite possible that much of the ancient Near East very much appreciated Nebuchadnezzar's reign. He did bring peace and prosperity. If you think of the image of Babylon in the book of Revelation, all the merchants of the earth hate to see Babylon fall because they profit by it. Nebuchadnezzar had, from his own point of view, with good reason, done great things. He probably was a man who was used to receiving praise for what he had done. But now comes God's decree. Verse 14. He cried aloud and said thus, "Hew down the tree, cut off his branches, shake off his leaves, scatter his fruit, let the beasts get away from under it, and the fowl from his branches." Everything is going to be taken away, just like that. All of the wealth, protection, fruitfulness that Nebuchadnezzar had provided will be gone. Those who find shelter under it are told to leave. And then the watchers say, "Bind the stump." Why bind the stump? What is the meaning of that? Well, some suggest it means to preserve it. In other words, bind it so that it does not rot. And that suggests the preservation of Nebuchadnezzar's life. But others suggest, no, it means more restrain it. This is what's going to happen to Nebuchadnezzar. He is not going to be allowed to increase again until the appointed time. One 19th century commentator suggests that it applies to Nebuchadnezzar figuratively and spiritually. The withdrawal of his free self-determination, the loss of his will, he will be bound by this iron band. He will not be allowed to grow, to increase, to spread out. They suggest that the iron binding is the fetters of madness, of insanity. And if you look at some of the Psalms in the Bible, there's good reason to think that. He will be bound by insanity. Psalm 107, verse 10, Job 36, verse 8, just two verses in the Old Testament that speak of the fetters, the iron bonds of affliction. Being bound in affliction and iron, Psalm 107 says about those who fall into sin and become captive. Now think of what that means. This Nebuchadnezzar who took such liberties with the lives of other people. We looked at that earlier. He owned people. He's now going to lose his liberty. In fact, he won't even have the liberty which is possessed by the humblest of his own slaves. The ability to have his own thoughts. He will be bound in the loss of his reason. There's a great deal of justice in that, isn't there? He who demanded more than was his will lose everything he has. We see that again and again in life. Those who will make themselves gods will end up being less than human. And that's what's going to happen to Nebuchadnezzar. Such people, one man said, decide that they can manipulate men and nature to suit their own convenience. And this is what happens. I don't know how familiar you are with the postmodern way of thinking that has dominated Western culture since about World War I. But a big part of postmodernism is the idea that there is no given truth, especially as applies to the human being. We make ourselves what we are. Our existence, this is where the word existentialism comes from, our existence comes before our essence. We don't have an essence. We don't have a given human nature. Through our experience, we can make ourselves whatever we want to be. Is that elevating the human race, or is that debasing the human race? I think we have all seen the results in the 20th century and continuing on into the 21st of what that way of thinking has done to the human character. We've not become greater than we were. We have become far, far less. Nebuchadnezzar will be greater than a man, then God will make him less than a man. He will make him as a beast. His place will be with the animals. His portion, his lot. He will have now the gift that was given to animals. That will be what he receives. Not the kingdom of Babylon, not even his own mind. He will have the life and the lot of an animal. And that's from God too. Both the good things and the difficult things are from God. His mind was taken from him. Your translation has in verse 16, let his heart be changed from man's and let a beast's heart be given him. The heart was the innermost self. He would lose that and he would get the heart of a beast. With all the degradation, all the filth that comes with that, that's what he would now have. He who aspired to be more than a man would now have the heart of a beast. And that's the way we see it again and again in human life. Why was this done to Nebuchadnezzar? Verse 22, to make the king acknowledge that heaven rules. That's the point. Heaven rules. That's a word that's been debased a little bit, like awesome and many other terms recently. I don't know if young people still use that phrase when they really, really like something. Oh, that rules. But think of what that really means, when something rules. That means it is the one. It is the thing that decides how everything else should be. Heaven rules. Nothing else rules. Look at the end of verse 32. Until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomever he will. Verse 17, the end of verse 17. That the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. Note Daniel's advice to the king. When the king explains the dream and Daniel is given the interpretation, what does Daniel say to him? Renounce your sin. Verse 27. Let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness. Remember the king of Nineveh? When Jonah came to him, what did he say? Let's repent. Sackcloth. Ashes. Let's abase ourselves, every man and woman, the cattle. Let's lower ourselves. And God showed mercy. Nebuchadnezzar apparently chooses not to do that. Work repentance, says Daniel. But Nebuchadnezzar does not. And Nebuchadnezzar will now face the judgment that was decreed. Nebuchadnezzar is driven out. The they drove him out there seems to refer to the watchers of heaven, that heavenly council. It does not seem to mean the people of his kingdom, but rather the heavenly ones, the holy ones, drove him out into the field where he lived like an animal with long curling fingernails and long tangled matted hair for 7 years, eating grass, being wet with the dew of heaven. I think there's a note of mercy there, even in the judgment. Yes, it's very humiliating. Even his own mind has been taken from him. But being wet with the dew of heaven, he is still in contact with God. That may be a poetic phrase, and wet with the dew of heaven, but in the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, it's often the poetic words that have the most weight. Wet with the dew of heaven. He is not shut off from God. When I go to my in-laws, they live out in the country in Minnesota, a lot of open field, little bits of woods and so forth. And I can take walks out there, and I think it's very good for me. Because one of the things that I can just feel as I am walking down that little country road with all those rolling fields is that I am an ant. In the city, I tend to too much fill my own frame of reference. You know, walking around my house, walking around the job, you're a big person. But crawling out across the face of the earth there on the open miles and miles, you realize, I think, a little more who you really are. And I think it was a gift that Nebuchadnezzar was lowered to the level of an animal, but out under the dew of heaven, out under the stars that the God of heaven had made. His reason is restored. When? At the decreed time. Look at verses 24 and 25. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High. They shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beast. And then on to verse 26. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee. After that, thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. Nebuchadnezzar does not take his kingdom back. His reason is restored to him. And then his kingdom of Babylon. One of the verses in this chapter that I would most like to understand deeply, and I'm not certain of, is verse 34. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned to me. What does that mean? Lifted up mine eyes unto heaven. Even as an animal, did God reveal himself to Nebuchadnezzar? Did God reach down in such a way that Nebuchadnezzar could look up? You read throughout the Bible, again, especially in the Old Testament, you'll see that that phrase recurs in numerous places. He lifted up his eyes. What do the proud do? What do the haughty do? They look down. The humble look up. I don't know what frame of mind Nebuchadnezzar was in. It seems to suggest that he looked up to heaven and then his reason was restored. Did God in his mercy touch the animalized Nebuchadnezzar and at least allow him to look up to heaven and look toward the God who made him and realize who that was? Perhaps he gave him an animal's understanding of God. You know, the Bible suggests in places, it hints that to some extent even the animals and the birds recognize their Creator, have a knowledge of Him in some way. Is that what Nebuchadnezzar was given? Perhaps. But it was great mercy nevertheless. Nebuchadnezzar's eyes go up to heaven and his reason was restored. The NIV has his sanity. The King James, his understanding. Nebuchadnezzar is given the kingdom of his own self back first. His kingdom, every man's kingdom. One commentator put it this way. I think it's an excellent way to put it. Pride is madness. Humility is sanity. I think I would have had a much happier life, especially as a young man, if I'd kept that in mind. Pride is madness. Humility is sanity. The result is that Nebuchadnezzar praises and glorifies the God of heaven. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever. There again, that idea of God is forever. God possesses what is his for all times. His kingdom can never be taken away. God is able to humble all powers in heaven and on earth. He is able to humble us. From day to day, from hour to hour, do we remember that? There are many ways to try and be more than what God has granted us to be. It's not always so dramatic, is it? It's seldom so dramatic as it was with Nebuchadnezzar. But there are many, many ways we are all capable of saying, "The Lord put me here, but I will be higher than that." And young people, I cannot stress to you enough that if you do that, if you walk that way, if you insist on seeing yourself as higher than what the Lord has made you, you will be much less than you would be by humbling yourself. Men who will be gods will be reduced to the level of animals or worse. The Lord can humble. He gives. He takes away. If we resist that, it's reason to be afraid. If we acknowledge that, as Nebuchadnezzar did, it's reason to glory. Let's pray together.